Can it go beyond some of the more vague agreements that were reached in Singapore?
A so-called moment of truth looms for North Korea and the United States. It's Wednesday, February 20th. This is VOA Asia. Hello and welcome. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Australia reels from a cyber hack. Bangladesh and Rohingya prepare for big storms. The talk of trade continues, treating depression, an increasingly popular diet choice. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Preparations continue for the second summit meeting between President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. The U.S. goal is to have complete and verifiable denuclearization by North Korea, but that is a very complicated, if not improbable, outcome. So what are the realistic possibilities as the second summit approaches next week in Vietnam? VOA's Bill Gallo is preparing to make the long flight to Hanoi, but first makes a quick stop by our studio to discuss this historic meeting and what we might expect to see and hear.
Well, I think the thing to look out for in this summit is, can it go beyond some of the more vague agreements that were reached in Singapore? Maybe the most important thing about the Singapore summit was that it happened at all. And I think there's a widespread expectation on behalf of not only analysts and experts in the nuclear field and you know, people who study Korea, but also among U.S. officials, that there needs to be progress on the main issue here, which is denuclearization. It's not clear how much progress there will be, but I think sort of a best-case scenario will be some sort of roadmap that perhaps provides timelines for North Korea's denuclearization, as well as maybe some compromise step that moves the process down the path, just even if a little bit.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo was saying they were going to try to push as hard as possible, as far as possible with this summit toward that goal of denuclearization, which is very difficult because that's the thing that North Korea sees as its security. And how do you achieve taking away something that they feel is their, you know, ace in the hole, if you will, their playing card that will give them power and authority to keep other people out of their country?
Right. I mean, you're absolutely right on that. And I don't think U.S. officials, when they're sort of speaking candidly, will deny that. They don't deny that North Korea has not shown lots of evidence that it's willing to give up all of its nuclear weapons. Donald Trump, in fact, on Tuesday said he is looking at denuclearization as the goal for the upcoming summit, but that he's in no rush at all for it to happen. Steve Biegun, the top U.S. negotiator on North Korea, actually said he's looking for substantial and real and verifiable progress towards that on the upcoming summit. But I think that in their more candid moments, even U.S. officials realize that this is going to be a slow process to the extent that it even happens at all.
There have been stories that, in fact, there really is no progress on denuclearization. North Korea is perhaps going the other way. Some of the satellite information suggests that they're actually increasing their program at this point.
Right. And it's a little ironic, though. Of course, North Korea is continuing these programs. They never really promised to give them up. And, I mean, there was a vague agreement signed in Singapore which talked about working toward the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, which of course means something different to North Korea than what it means to the United States. They've traditionally viewed that as being the U.S. giving up any of its nuclear capable assets, possibly even as, and let me stress that there are no U.S. nuclear weapons in South Korea, but you know, of course, like, you know, visits from aircraft and ships and things like that. North Korea has even at times called for, you know, the removal of U.S. troops altogether. So they view denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula very different from what the U.S. views this as, which is North Korea unilaterally gives up all of its nuclear weapons.
Yeah, through the past few decades, there have been sporadic interactions with North Korea. South Korea had the Kaesong Industrial Complex that they had developed with the North Koreans to kind of promote a cross-border trade. trade industrial thing that worked for a while, and then it got shut down. They had exchanges of people who were separated, families separated during the Korean War, and there was a little bit of that occasionally. Things have opened up, at least on the front, with South Korea, much more so since the Pyeongchang Olympics. And when you're dealing with a so-called hermit state, opening up is a lot of work, and it takes a lot of time to develop.
Right, and there's a sense that North Korea actually really likes this ongoing engagement with South Korea because it puts the U.S., of course, in an awkward position. It doesn't want to be the one that's seen as spoiling, you know, this inter-Korean relationship that's making things worse. And I think the Moon administration in South Korea is also probably realizing this and is eager to move the process forward because he knows this locks in a peace process to some degree.
It's a real tightrope because North Korea's position is get the United States out of the picture completely. And we're not going anywhere. South Korea's not going anywhere. And that puts a whole spin on the summit, too, as far as expectations and you know, realistic goals that can be achieved.
Yeah, it does. And I think one more thing to realize, there's been a lot of talk about whether Donald Trump will modify U.S. troop levels in South Korea. He has, of course, for years, even decades, sort of denigrated the U.S. troop presence in South Korea. He has more recently said this is not something that is being talked about. He has strongly suggested that he will not make any movement on this at the upcoming summit. But you never know. I think a lot of people are not convinced that Donald Trump actually believes that based on his comments in the past.
Well, the annual joint exercises certainly have been scaled back. That's one concession that has been made. We'll see where it goes. Bill Gallo, you're going to be at the summit.
Yeah, we're going to be there starting Thursday. It should be another historic moment. But again, I can't stress enough how much higher the expectations are for this summit. They really cannot probably get away with just meeting, shaking hands, signing a vague agreement, and walking up. There will be real questions about where this is going if that's the only result from this in Vietnam.
We'll probably have more questions to share with you in the coming week as we get closer to the summit. Bill, thank you so much. Safe travels.
Thank you so much.
The United States and North Korea have dispatched several teams to Vietnam ahead of the summit in Hanoi, February the 27th and 28th, although officials have remained tight-lipped on their movements and meetings. On Tuesday, a Vietnamese source with knowledge of planning for high-level diplomatic meetings told the French press agency that several North Korean officials had visited the China border area on Monday. We invite you to read more on the upcoming summit between Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un by following us on Facebook at VOA Asia. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. A report says the United States wants pledge for stable Chinese yuan as talks resume. Indonesia submits bid to host 2032 Olympics. Indonesian forest fires highlight president's campaign gaffe. South Korean women abandon makeup to fight male domination. Cheap and green, Pyongyang upgrades its mass transit system. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories with a lot of video and photos on Facebook at VOA Asia. You can also stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison says the country's major political parties have been hit by a hack on their computer networks. The government says the systems were infiltrated by a sophisticated state actor, as we hear from Phil Mercer in Sydney.
Australia's cybersecurity agencies believe an unnamed foreign government was behind the attacks earlier this month. Computer networks used by all of the major parties were compromised. The breach was uncovered during an investigation into the hacking of computer servers at Parliament House in the national capital, Canberra. Prime Minister Scott Morrison.
Members will be aware that the Australian Cyber Security Centre recently identified a malicious intrusion into the Australian Parliament House computer network. During the course of this work, we also became aware that the networks of some political parties, Liberal, Labor and Nationals, have also been affected. But our cyber experts believe that a sophisticated state actor is responsible for this malicious activity.
Officials say there's no evidence of electoral interference, but Australia is boosting its cyber defences in response. A federal election is expected in May. In December, Canberra publicly accused China for the first time of supporting a campaign of cyber espionage to steal commercial secrets. In 2015 and 2016, there were high-profile attacks on Australia's official weather and statistics agencies. Beijing has previously denied interfering in Australia's domestic affairs. Following the online breach earlier this month, there was also press speculation that North Korea or Russia could have been involved. Officials said there was no evidence that information had been accessed or stolen. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, the United States is seeking to secure a pledge from China it will not devalue its yuan as part of an agreement intended to end the country's trade war, according to a Bloomberg report. Officials from the two countries are discussing how to address currency policy in a memorandum of understanding. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad, as always, to have you with us on VOA Asia. The International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies warns that hundreds of thousands of Rohingya refugees in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh, have little to protect themselves from the ravages of the upcoming cyclone season. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Red Cross headquarters in Geneva.
Red Cross officials say most of the 700,000 Rohingya refugees in Cox's Bazar will have difficulty withstanding the heavy rains and winds almost certain to hit them in a few weeks. Red Cross spokesman Matthew Cochran tells VOA the refugees are living in squalid, fragile housing with only rotting bamboo and shredding plastic to protect them.
When the rains start, they're going to have very little protection, and if there's a direct hit from a cyclone, which is not unheard of in Cox's Bazar, they'll have next to nothing to protect them against the wind.
The cyclone season begins in April and runs through May. Then it reappears in October. Red Crescent staff and volunteers on the ground are racing to protect as many people as possible from potential disaster. Cochran says so far they have distributed tarpaulins, ropes, and tools to some 200,000 people. He says they have trained thousands to make their shelters sturdier and safer. He says refugees are receiving training on early warning and on emergency evacuation. Unfortunately, that is unlikely to be of much use, as there is nowhere for the refugees to go to escape a disaster. Another concern, he says, is that of waterborne diseases like dysentery and cholera.
The risk of waterborne diseases or other vector-borne diseases is always a concern in an emergency situation like this, particularly where there's inadequate sanitation or inadequate access to clean water, and particularly during flooding when sanitation systems are flooded out and you can see large areas of stagnant water sitting for weeks on an end.
Cochran says the first priority is to rebuild, repair, and strengthen existing shelters as quickly as possible. He says cyclone preparedness training and emergency drills are ongoing. He says water and sanitation, as well as healthcare facilities, are available to assist those in need. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Coming up, Chinese telecom giant Huawei gets a positive call about its service. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Special English. A way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
The latest news from VOA Asia. Facing a future demographic crisis and aging society, China's leaders are desperately seeking to persuade couples to have more children. But bureaucrats don't seem to have gotten the message. A couple has been fined in a recently widely publicized case for having a third child against the strict letter of the law. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, more trade talks for the United States and China. And Huawei gets a nod of confidence amid a storm of controversy. Those are the topics on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
Trade negotiations continue this week in Washington between China and the United States. The two sides are trying to reach an agreement before the upcoming March 1st deadline, when President Trump says the U.S. will raise tariffs on $200 billion worth of Chinese goods from 10% to 25%. Small progress has been made. China has agreed to disclose more of its government subsidies to the World Trade Organization and to let foreign companies be involved on setting standards for key industrial issues. But the U.S. is pushing for much deeper structural reforms. It wants China to limit government subsidies on a wide range of manufacturing products that compete with American businesses. Tim Stratford is with the American Chamber of Commerce in China.
So both styles of football are good, but if you have different ways of playing it, and China and the U.S. have a different understanding of the rules, and so that's creating problems.
China has tried to assuage American concerns about its government-subsidized investments by offering to guarantee large purchases from the U.S. But critics argue the offer is too much of a departure from the market-driven policies of the United States. Since the trade war began, China's economy has slowed down, with consumers reluctant to spend and investors reluctant to invest. While significant differences remain in the trade talks, U.S. President Donald Trump says he will delay the deadline for the tariff hike increase if it appears that the two sides are closer to closing a deal. The United Kingdom has said there's no need to ban the Chinese telecommunication firm Huawei from building phone networks in the country. The announcement came as a relief to the company, as a growing number of countries have called for Huawei's technology to be banned, citing concerns that Chinese spies could have access to their equipment. The company has been shut out of public contracts in the U.S., and Washington has been pushing for others to follow suit. Australia, New Zealand, and Japan have banned the company, and several European countries are also considering action. Huawei continues to deny all allegations. Its position has been bolstered by the latest announcement by the UK Intelligence Services National Cybersecurity Center. The announcement comes as countries around the world are starting to plan for the next generation of mobile phone services. Building the infrastructure will cost billions, and Huawei does not want to miss out. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
This news from VOA Asia. Indonesia has submitted a bid to host the 2032 Olympics after winning praise for hosting last year's Asian Games. Indonesia could face competition from India and a joint bid by North and South Korea. President Joko Widodo sent a bid letter to the International Olympic Committee last week. VOA Asia Facebook hosts all the big stories through the day. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, depression is more than just being sad. It's a serious disease that interferes with normal life, a sense of self-worth, and in serious cases, it can end in suicide. But depression is treatable with talk therapy, medication, or a combination of the two. VOA's Carol Pearson reports there is also a treatment that delivers magnetic pulses directly to the brain.
Sonia Kibbe likes playing pickleball.
0-2-1.
Kibbe is a physical therapist in Columbia, Missouri. She is normally active, but last year, because of severe depression, she had trouble making simple decisions.
Just dumb little decisions that we make that we don't even think about, I have to think about. And then it just gets me more stressed out because every little decision is hard.
People who are depressed are often listless. depression affects eating habits and sleep, even with medication and therapy. Kibbe thought about suicide and was hospitalized several times. Then she heard about a treatment called transcranial magnetic stimulation, or TMS. It does not involve surgery or require anesthesia. TMS uses a coil to deliver powerful magnetic pulses to the brain.
These pulses will stimulate neurotransmitters, which are the chemical signals, which will improve the communication between different regions of the brain that are responsible for mood regulations. And over time, this will improve the symptoms of depression.
It feels like someone gently tapping you on your head, which can cause a headache. After just 1 week, she noticed a real difference.
And I just felt so much better.
After more than 30 treatments, her symptoms of depression almost disappeared.
Basically, 50-60% of people who suffer from treatment-resistant depression will see a clinically meaningful response to TMS, and one-third of these people will go into remission, which means that their symptoms will completely go away.
The U.S. National Institute of Mental Health says two large studies on the safety of TMS found that most side effects, such as headaches, were mild or moderate. But because the treatment is relatively new, long-term side effects are unknown, and more studies need to be done. TMS worked for Kibbe. She returned to work and picked up pickleball again. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
From Los Angeles to London and in many parts across Asia, veganism and vegan products are gaining popularity. The Economist and Forbes magazines have dubbed 2019 as the Year of the Vegan. VOA's Mariama Diallo tells us about the increasingly popular diet that is entirely plant-based.
Tocaya Organica, a Mexican restaurant chain with outlets in California and Arizona, says it's set to open 11 more restaurants in the U.S. and abroad by the end of 2019. CEO and co-founder Tosh Berman says the vegan message is simple.
The message of Tocaya is really, it's a message of better living. Better living from a health perspective, better living on the impact that it creates on the environment, the ingredients that we put in our body.
Have a nice day. Thank you.
Eric Gallen, a personal talent manager, and Julia Rose, a social media creator, are regular customers. Gallen says a good dose of vegan food is a must for him.
Today, for example, I started at 7 a.m. I'll have 8 meetings today. And if I don't eat well, I don't feel good, I don't have energy, I don't perform well.
Grocery stores like this one in the Los Angeles area are also trying to cater to this trend. Airworn organic grocer and cafe brand manager Joyce DeBrevain says veganism is growing.
Whether people are deciding to go vegan for ethical reasons, for health reasons, or because of climate change concerns, we definitely are seeing more and more people, probably not going all the way vegan, but definitely incorporating more vegan items into their diet.
The vegan philosophy extends to clothing and cosmetics, too. Many beauty products include honey, beeswax, and keratin, which is a protein found in animal cells. In London's Hackney neighborhood, James Fisher opened Whip, a vegan hair salon.
We wanted to be as eco-friendly, sustainable, and cruelty-free as possible. And being a vegan hair salon is part of that. So our products are vegan and organic, and the refreshments that we serve are vegan as well.
Sarah Maddox is a client at the salon.
I choose to have my hair done at Whip because I really appreciate their company ethos. I try to align the way I spend my money with my personal values, and this is something that's quite important to me.
A report by U.S.-based Grandview Research said the global vegan cosmetic market is estimated at $12.9 billion. And according to a report by research firm Global Data, 6% of U.S. customers claimed to be vegan in 2017, up from just 1% in 2014. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. You'll find us at VOA Asia Facebook and, of course, our website, voanews.com. And you'll find us on the radio, U-Radio of Hatay University, FM 101.25 at Hatay University in Thailand. Thanks to everyone there who's tuned in today. We appreciate you listening. We appreciate our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Zubir El-Tayeb. Managing editor, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.